The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Paco Rome.
I'm George Chen.
And this is SupDoc, where we discuss and dissect documentaries chosen by our guests from the worlds of comedy, film, television, and more. And for the month of mayhem, every episode will be about a true crime doc.
Today, we're talking about 2012's West of Memphis by Amy Berg, a follow-up to the Paradise Lost trilogy about the infamous 1989 Arkansas child murders.
The West Memphis Three were teenagers corralled into confessing. They were tried and convicted and sentenced to life in prison. During the trial, the prosecution asserted that the children were killed as part of a satanic ritual, and the West Memphis Three fit the type of suspects the cops were looking for.
While they fought for their innocence from prison, celebrities like Henry Rollins, Eddie Vedder, and Peter Jackson helped keep their cause alive, and even funded new investigations that turned up surprising suspects and a twist ending.
Our guest is filmmaker Gavin Michael Booth, the director of Scarehouse. In addition to making films, his music video and commercial work has been featured around the globe, including collaborations with Third Eye Blind, NBC Universal, Sony Pictures, Blumhouse, Royal Bank of Canada, and more.
You can stream West of Memphis on Amazon and iTunes. Warning, there are some very graphic crime scene photos shown throughout the film.
And now, here's our talk with Gavin. And we are here with our guest, Gavin Michael Booth.
Hello.
Hello.
In I said that sound slowly. Booth.
Booth in a sound booth.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely. It's happy to be here.
And you picked West of Memphis as your doc to chat about.
Happy little tale.
A happy little tale of murder, intrigue, intensities.
I'm happy that you chose this one so I didn't have to watch three other movies. That's basically
the only,
even though aesthetically, Lost. I think people like those movies better.
They're very detailed.
Mm-hmm. They're like iconographic. At this point, they're like icon of, they're like some of the best docs ever made.
To me, they're, you know, that was my introduction to kind of like true crime documentaries. And, mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know, when you think about the fact that HBO did those and they greenlit that film and then the sequels and like, you know, if not for HBO, these guys might not be out of jail.
I think that's,
that's such a strange thing that a filmmaker does have that power sometimes to change, you know, and that's where documentaries are so important.
HBO's getting people out of jail. HBO's putting people in jail.
Like, yes.
It's all happening.
HBO is the cop of our country.
Yeah.
Our institutions are failing us, but thank God documentaries are around.
What's interesting about that, you know, because there is Paradise Lost 1, 2, and 3, which collectively are like 6 hours long and covered the story for almost the full 18 years that they were in prison. But West of Memphis, in one film, opens up so many more angles and uncovered evidence and things that they hadn't, which I find fascinating that you feel like they would have covered everything in those three docs,
but there was still hours.
So much more to the story. And I don't know what the update is because I know, you know, they were let out on that. It was called an Alfred plea. I think where you admit to being guilty of the crime, but you get to, you know, be innocent. It's just one of those. But that meant they couldn't sue the state. But, I remember reading because Peter Jackson and his wife produced this one. They said they were going to keep making docs and keep investigating. But I've never heard any follow ups. I don't know if there's like a Paradise Lost 4 coming or
seen any.
Or is there still any police pressure on the
main suspect?
Killer?
Think it seems like because of the way the deal went down. Yeah. It's almost like they can't go after the other guy because it's just, we got our guys.
Well, they have a guilty plea.
They have a guilty plea. Yeah. So they're not, even though this does posit a pretty convincing case about a different stepfather than the other films posited a case about, right?
Yeah.
The other films posited
Mark Byers.
Mark Byers.
Who, I mean, let's just assume people who are listening to this have seen the Paradise Lost trilogy. Like Mark Byers comes across as this insane man in those three
films until the last one, really, when they talk to him and he's more remorseful and actually like, I don't know actually what's going on. But like when you've watched the first one, especially when he's by the river and he's like praying and like,
oh, lighting things on fire
and he's got the overalls on and his teeth are kind of loose, you know, because he has dentures and stuff. And you're just like, oh, my God, he did it. That's what made it so fucking compelling, because you're like, he did it. He didn't do it.
Yeah.
He did it. You know?
Yeah. You never from like anybody watching that. It's just fascinating to me that like anybody even just sitting in that courtroom could have ever thought, oh, these are the three guys that did it, and just kept steaming ahead with like, you know, locking these kids up.
Yeah. I mean, it is so hard. I will say, for people that are new to this experience, like watching West of Memphis, it's like anytime there's actually footage or Polaroids of the kids' bodies, like, I mean, there's just like naked kids like on the wet ground. It's such a gut reaction that I think you just want to like not deal with it. And if you're like on a jury and you have to look at this stuff, I think you just want to be like, I just wanted the simplest solution.
But the damning thing is the false confession from Jesse Miskelly, right? Which is always there's another great doc series now about false confessions on Netflix.
Oh, what's that one?
I forget the name offhand.
Lies.
But I don't know. It's four short doc episodes about famous false confessions and these crazy stories. There's lots of them. Yeah.
I mean, Making a Murderer.
There's some crossover.
And I feel like there would be no Making a Murderer without Paradise Lost, without West of Memphis.
Absolutely.
You know?
A lot of people consider the Paradise Lost trilogy the beginning of the true crime doc scenario. Yeah. Like,
I remember, I saw it in high school, so I was about the same age as those kids, too. And there's always that thing, too, where you're like, right, man, I have my hair long. I listen to Metallica records and play drums. And, I've read some stuff in the early days of the internet about, like, you know, the Necronomicon and things like, I like dark movies. Like, to think that you could just be picked up off the street and somebody could put together a whole false narrative of a timeline and you end up in jail for that.
That's terrifying. The grace of God. I know, it is terrifying. Henry Rollins in West of Memphis, this doc, actually says the same thing. He's like, that could have been me. You know, like I was disenfranchised. Yeah. I didn't
writing about depression in his notebook.
Yeah.
I think, too, there's that and all the celebrities that came in. And I always wonder, like, you know, if not for Peter Jackson and, Johnny Depp and Eddie Vedder and Henry Rollins, like throwing concerts and raising money and donating millions of dollars to new, investigations. They'd be sitting there.
Rotting, but maybe already executed. By now.
That's definitely how I came to know about this stuff, is through those people and those connections. And also, I used to work for Jello Biafra, so that was my other connection. Like, when this case was ongoing and there were like fundraisers, like they'd be like art auctions and things.
Okay.
And like it'd be like Rollins hosting and then like Jello would go to one of those. But even with all that, I didn't really get deep into it. I mean, I think he would start telling me something like, well, the judge is running for this other thing, so we can, there will be a new judge and things like that. But it was just going one ear out the other at the time. I was just like not clued in on everything that was going on with the case.
Did you pick up on his Jello impression?
No.
That's pretty good.
It's casual Jello.
There's so many people, including legal experts, that put in pro bono work for these guys. It's insane the amount of time and effort and just organization that had to happen, which you also see in the original trilogies.
What year did Paradise Lost come out?
94.
So they HBO like commissioned them to go down and follow the
court trial. Stuff. Yeah, they were commissioned to go down and follow the trial. Okay. And then it just started to unfold. They're like, this is insane. Right.
Well, what I had read too is Bruce Sanofsky, they were intrigued by the killing in London, in England. These two kids who were like 13 killed a 2-year-old.
Oh, like kidnapped them from a mall or something and like behind a dumpster. Yeah, and I do remember that.
That was in the 90s too.
That was in the early 90s and they went to London. They went to, I don't know if it's London, I shouldn't say that. They went to England, Great Britain, to do a doc about it because they were interested about child killers. And then they heard about this and they thought initially that these guys were guilty. And that's what they were interested in, were kids that kill kids. Mm-hmm. And then they went with that in mind. And as the trial and stuff went on, they were like, oh, shit.
How so many great docs start, right?
Exactly.
This is what we're going to go do. And there's this massive left turn, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's a massive left. And you were telling me before we started recording. Let's get into your background.
Sure.
Because people are going to be like, what's this guy do?
Kevin.
Not a lot.
Yeah. Besides not a lot. But you're a filmmaker.
Yes.
And you make, you've made horror movies, mm-hmm. Scare House being one of them, which I saw, which is very good.
Thank you.
It scared me, by the way. BT Dubs.
Perfect.
Yeah. And you also shot a film on an iPhone.
We did. We teamed up the company Blumhouse. They're, you know, hot commodity now. They did the Get Out. Which won an Oscar this year.
So you basically won an Oscar.
I'm 1 degree from an Oscar winner. No, it was, I had this idea. Pre-Facebook, just before Facebook Live, it was Periscope was the big, you know, live streaming thing. Right. And I, you know, the first time I played with it, I thought, man, somebody should make a Blair Witch style movie with a cell phone and stream it live. And I went, I should make a movie and do this. And we figured out, you know, did some quick Google research, like, this would be a world first. Like, nobody's done this. So I had a meeting with the Blumhouse guys. And they loved it and greenlit it. And a couple months later, we right before Halloween 2015, we went live and did this. So the idea was a serial killer.
Oh,
it was called 15. It was a serial killer
awesome.
Using his iPhone to stream his murders. And what you were buying into is that this was like night eight of like a reign of terror on LA. And everybody was sort of waiting for him to log in. But we didn't really tell anybody it was fake. So it's
you actually did it in the live streams.
Yeah, we did.
Okay,
did it live.
I didn't realize
and
that was part
the,
of
the
it.
Camera operator was the actor playing the killer, so he could read the comments coming in from people and interact with the audience.
Whoa.
So if somebody said, "Oh, this is fake," he'd be like, "Oh yeah, I'll kill your family next, Superman 235 or whatever their screen name
was. Your ISP address.
Yeah, and everything. All the stunts and the blood effects. Everything had to be done live.
Right.
It was just a little 20-minute performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, it went off without a hitch. It was a lot of fun and, you know, nice to contribute something as a world first to the entertainment industry.
That's like modern day Orson Wellian.
Which was strange because we broadcast, I think it was April 29th, and I didn't realize until the press the next day, October 30th was War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
So everybody's like, it's the next War of the Worlds.
Right,
I was like, well, yeah, it's exactly how we planned it.
Yes.
Well, I love real-time filmmaking, like making things in a single shot, and this fell into that. And I had a documentary-style movie, like Paranormal Activity thing, about a shooting in a high school. It was like Columbine meets Blair Witch, where the shooter gives four kids cameras and says, go film everything you see today, and you get to live.
Oh.
So we were funded multiple times.
Gosh.
We had funding through... an LA producer once. We
the
had
look on
through,
George's face right
yeah.
now.
No, these are great ideas.
Well, we had funding through Mel Gibson's company at one point, Icon, and we were cast. We were fully cast and in rehearsal pre-production twice, and another public shooting would happen in America.
Right, of course.
And somebody would get cold feet.
Right.
So after 5 years of that, I just kind of said, I'm going to walk away from this project. I'm going to do... And even the people involved in that at that time said, what else do you have? I said, well, I have this film called Scare House. It all takes place in a fun house and two girls have this revenge plot. They went, great, that's safe. We're making that.
Yes.
You're greenlit. Like, literally,
that's
it was like the fastest pitch to production ever. But that came as almost an apology to the 4 years of like dragging me through the mud on this.
But that's like what horror is good for, like something like that idea, like that edgy of an idea.
It's not glorifying school violence or anything like that. But yeah, I like things that blur the line between documentary and, you know, where people can feel like it's a real experience.
Found footage horror. We were talking about that yesterday.
There's only a handful of them that have done it great. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw Unfriended that Blumhouse did.
No, I think I saw the trailer.
It all
possibly.
Takes place in a Skype chat room.
I think I
and
heard about
the whole
this.
Movie is presented like that. It's basically like a girl that was committed suicide shows up as maybe a ghost, maybe somebody pranking them in their chat room. Basically, if you log off or leave this screen, you will die.
Whoa!
You know, and it was fantastically executed. So every once in a while, somebody comes up with a way to kind of reinvent the wheel or do something interesting with that medium.
Yeah, horror seems to be. And we had a guy, we just talked to a guy who's like doing a new podcast about horror stuff.
Okay.
We're getting into like horror theory and all these things, and like how it, like, because it's a lower budget medium, generally people can just be risky, take more risks.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, you know, not just because I had the chance to work with them, but like a huge fan of what Blumhouse is doing, and now Platinum Dunes with the Quiet Place that opened. You know,
I've heard great things about that.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Krasinski.
Yeah, they're spending, you know, they get to spend low amounts of money, and it's stuff that doesn't even have to be star driven. Like, you know, Krasinski's married to Emily Blunt, so of course they can be in it. But, you know, a lot of these movies, you know, the Paranormal Activities and Cloverfields and things, when they come out, it doesn't require star power.
It Follows. Everyone talked about It Follows.
Love It Follows.
It's like something with a really simple premise you can do. Yeah.
Nick Shrelly, one of the producers of that, and I have a project in development right now.
Oh, awesome.
That movie was mind-blowingly good and costs, you know.
How did you end up being a horror film director?
I've loved movies my whole life. I'm Canadian. I grew up on the border with Detroit, Michigan, not too far from
Toronto,
this guy,
or Ontario,
here.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Toronto's a few hours away,
but Windsor.
And you know, was work just always writing movies, and this, you know, the school shooting movie was gonna be my big break several different times.
Wait. Are you saying you grew up near Michigan?
I did.
Take a drink, everybody.
He's showing his hand.
Right next to it.
That's kind of a running gag on this podcast.
Well, I got my start
at this point
making a fake Canadian CBC pass and sneaking into concerts in Detroit.
Nice.
And I would, I just wanted to see free concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And I started bringing a video camera and a microphone, being like, I'm here to interview the band. And 9 out of 10 times it worked, and I got to actually meet the bands.
And
I liked.
Green room access, probably.
High school era? What is this?
No, I was just shortly after high school. Yeah. So I was probably about 19 or 20. I was doing like some of the worst Detroit TV commercials you've ever seen. I directed.
Oh, nice. There's lots of them.
I was doing some of that back in the day, and people's wedding videos and whatever would pay the bills so that I could, like, I'm going to Kevin Smith my way into this industry. I'm going to spend $25,000 on a movie, and then I'll go to Sundance and I'll get famous. And then I blew $25,000 and didn't get famous, and nobody saw the movie because it sucked. But, you know, it was a good film school lesson in failure.
You're on this podcast now. That's all the fame.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
That's
man.
All
you made it, baby.
This is your gatekeepers of Hollywood. Yeah. These two, right?
But yeah.
Here.
The sneaking into concerts ended up turning into like real music video gigs and tour video gigs for a couple bands, and that's what launched me eventually, slowly, to wind my way out to.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because you make videos for Third Eye Blind, and you're making new videos now for a band. And I'm sorry, but how do you say their name?
It's Syml, S-Y-M-L.
Syml.
Some people think it's Simple or Smile,
I thought it was just S-Y-M-L, but it's
Syml. Could be that too.
Okay. Yeah. Those are awesome. Is that guy, is this a single dude?
Single guy. His name's Brian Fennell. He was in a band called Barcelona previous to this. And this is his little solo passion project that just, you know, mostly in the last year or so, after a couple of the sort of key TV show, like Teen Wolf played one of his songs in an episode, and it just stratosphered him.
Oh, wow.
It's been great. And I'm three or four videos in with him now. And each one has just found great success. And it's a really interesting take, because he's up to this point not necessarily wanted to be in his music videos, so it gives me the freedom as a filmmaker to sort of make like a short story or a short film style music video without the artist.
So you write them and direct them?
Yeah.
And you pitch them like an idea? And
yeah, generally for music videos, you know, I have an agent for music videos, or I just talk to bands direct, and they'll send me the song and kind of the budget parameters, and then it's up to me to put together some kind of, you know, written or visual pitch and say, hey, do any of these work? And, you know, I'm really gung-ho. Like, if I like a song and I like the band and I want to work with them, I'll say, even if nothing of these five ideas I sent you works, I'll send you five more. Let's try to find something. But, yeah, sometimes I just, if I just don't have any ideas for the song, I'll be the first one to say I'm not the right guy for the project.
Yeah. I've wondered if, like, music video budgets must have gone down in some place, but then some of the effects are cheaper to do too.
Yeah, or just trying to find interesting things to do that don't, you know, the kings of it are Okay Go, where they say, let's get six treadmills to dance on, and we'll use our sister's camcorder. You know, there's a lot of invention that can still come out of music videos. Or, you know, we shot one the day that the iPhone 4 hit the market, and FaceTime was available for the first time. We shot a music video over FaceTime.
Oh, cool.
But that was like, we bought the phones that day, shot it that night, had it out the next day just to make sure
Took the phone back the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we scratched one of them, but that one became my phone.
Gavin, I have a question for you. If George and I wore booty shorts, could we be in your next music video?
I will find a concept that works for awesome. That.
I demand 100%. To be a Third Eye Blind video.
Oh, that's yeah.
All we I could demand. Probably make that happen too. Yeah. That. Based on the budgets, they'll have to and the San Francisco proximity. Some homegrown talent.
Based on the budget,
make the podcast part of a Third Eye Blind video. We're interviewing Stephen Jenkins, and then all of a sudden, like the roof falls off or something.
Yeah. He was a JT Leroy.
Yes, that actually kind of reminded me of what happens when we're just talking about how all the celebrities jump on
the
topic. You know, like Johnny Depp and Eddie Vedder and all these, you know, people just like found this cause. JT Leroy was a little bit of that phenomenon as well. There was a lot of, I mean, that was actually specifically being recruited by the person they thought was JT Leroy,
right.
though.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit different, but.
Okay. And then he got on board with that. That was a cause they got behind.
I don't know if Johnny Depp did, but I just think the phenomenon was similar. Oh, Stephen Jenkins was. Yeah.
But it is when you watch this, I couldn't help but think of all the people who are rotting away in our prison systems, who are innocent, who don't have celebrity power behind them and never will. And also the people of color who are just like, you know, like, where are my protests? When are the people coming from?
That's the problem with like this thing of having a documentary to exonerate you is like, we don't all have a documentary about us. No. You know,
they become celebrity prisoners the same way that like anybody with talent that's not getting their fair shot when arguably less talented people are, you know, millionaires and like the top of their game. It's just, you know, there's no way to service everybody. What I thought was interesting with West of Memphis and Peter Jackson's approach was that they were not just documenting what had already happened. They were like, we're going to document and try to cause change for this instead of just standing back and watching things unfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when they said, okay, we want to investigate they get into the snapping turtle.
Yeah.
Thing, like to prove that it was animal wounds and not like this ritualistic killing.
I'm not convinced that turtles aren't Satan after watching those.
Especially the one they hold up and the poor guy willing to have his arm chopped.
Keep it going. Keep it going.
That's the bite we want.
Could Peter Jackson maybe tidy up a bit?
never. Yeah. He won his Oscar with like an open shirt.
You remember the South Park where the guy's on the video, he's like the hacker, the video game player.
The World of Warcraft episode?
Yeah. That's when he has the same lean and he has the same like open shirt. Oh my God, it's him.
Probably has the same toilet under his seat.
Yeah, he's earned his slovenly. earned his slovenliness, though.
What was interesting there, but you know, they said we're not going to do one investigation. Mm-hmm. We'll do several. We'll hire several of the best experts. We're not going to tell them anything about the case. We're just going to like take all the names and remove everything. And then like it was 7 or 8 different independent investigators all came up with the exact same
forensics
conclusions.
People about the turtle stuff specifically. Yeah. Yeah.
Or just wild animal stuff, which happens after death all the time.
And the DNA testing, you know, of the hair, because it's the hair they found in the ligature, the wrist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One strand of hair.
But then it gets crazy because, what's his name? Terry Hobbs, the father their stepfather, Stephen Branch.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Had never, not Stephen Branch. What was it?
Bush?
Stevie Hobbs? Brush. Stevie Hobbs.
No, Branch. Stevie Branch.
Because that was he's from a stepfather. Previous. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That he had never been questioned or considered as a suspect ever.
Ever,
right.
Like that's what they explain. You know, you always start with the immediate family,
always.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they start interviewing other family members. Because, oh, yeah, he would beat the living hell out of him constantly.
Right.
Oh, he whipped him with a belt. Yeah. He admits he whipped him with a belt. But, oh, no, I never left a mark, you know?
Not to mention the prior convictions.
Right.
And the poor.
The home invasion.
And his actual daughter.
That was rough.
Where she's, you know, she's in therapy and can't remember if she was sexually molested or if it was just a dream, which I'm going to go with actually sexually molested.
Also, her brother was murdered at the age of 8 too. So
yeah, I know. It's just, but then you're just like, nobody sat down and decided to talk to this chunk of the family. Nope. Like,
because they had it. They had their guys. They had their guys. And these, oh man, when you can see the power hungriness and the like, I know all. I'm going to prosecute. I have the power and I'm going to do it in prosecutor's eyes. It's so fucking scary.
Yep.
Like making a murderer, that dude, the prosecutor in that documentary also had that same fucking look, which is like, I'm running for governor on this.
Yeah. I'm going to make my case. I'm going to become super famous. I'm going to get all the political power I want. And then I'm going to do everything in my power to stop the truth from coming out. Sounds a little bit like something happening in our wonderful country right now.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's true though. It is interesting. And then, you know, the journalists and the documentary people that pick up the slack and start to really, you know, pull at threads and find things. And I can't, you know, with 18 years they were in jail.
Yes.
You know, and
not even, just jail, maximum prison.
Even, yeah. Eddie Vedder says at one point, you know, says, you know, I got involved. I thought, you know, a year or two, they're going to be released. And then, you know, like it hit the 5-year mark. And if anybody had told me that at the beginning, like, not sure if we would have had the energy to go through with it. But once you're in it, you want to keep going.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting that like some of these celebrities were actively involved.
Yeah.
He's there at the trial when they're getting released. You know, he's there as part of the investigation and on the phone with, is it Lori, his girlfriend?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not just like, oh, I gave some money and the band's attached to the concert. You know, he's like really adamantly involved in it. And that's impressive to see. I feel like more celebrities probably have causes like this that we just don't hear about it until there would ever be like some kind of break in the case.
Yeah, I think the Rollins thing also, he's talked about it on his own podcast because he did the Benefit album, which was like getting members of Black Flag and all these other people to do Black Flag covers.
Yeah.
So it was a big deal when he did that too, because like he also had to go against Greg Ginn. I think Ginn must have signed off on that or something to do the songs.
Yeah, they said that they... because I imagine that would be great. If you're a 16-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid and you get that album, you're like, dedicated to the West Memphis 3, what's that? You know, obviously the line, I never saw the album, but I'm sure the liner notes had a whole explanation of what they were doing and benefit concerts. You know, benefit concerts to get somebody out of jail that's not common.
No.
Benefit concerts are usually like the farm aids and the hurricane aids and everything else like that, you know.
Yeah, there are fundraisers for like Mumia, and there's maybe like fundraisers that are generally like anti-death penalty, which might have been another angle into this. Is like you could have like looked at this and been like, let's talk about getting rid of the death penalty in general, and then maybe and apply this as a great case of that, and then you kind of get into like, well, then let's like look at all the evidence and like let's try to see if we can get a retrial.
I wonder, I would love to know if HBO or somebody, if there's a Paradise Lost 4 in the works or what's what. You know, they never announce these things until they're like close to completion on them. But I feel like we also live in sort of like a time of like heightened documentary interest.
Yeah.
So I feel like it would be to their benefit.
We hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. They're still creating some of the best documentaries to date. So I feel like it's got to happen, or I'll just go make it if they don't, because I always do that. Like they're out of jail, but it's like, yeah, they're still, I mean, when did they get out of jail? Like 2011, 2012?
12, I think.
Sounds right. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Or 12. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Cause but, I remember Paradise Lost 3.
No, 11.
It either premiered at TIFF or in Toronto, or it was just about to, and they got out of jail. The film was completed and they got out of jail and they had to go back and like update the movie. Because
this came out in
released.
2012, West of Memphis. Yeah. So they got out in 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I had a question. Did you guys just watch this again recently, right?
Mm-hmm. I actually watched it this morning just so I'd be fresh on it.
I maybe missed a chunk because I have a DVD where it would be like, it would occasionally be like skipping a section. I'm like, what just happened? Yeah. So there is Terry Hobbs' nephew, Michael Hobbs Jr., right?
Oh, when that
and they
all comes
show,
out.
Okay, there's references to the friends. His face is blanked out. What happened with Michael Hobbs Jr.? Is he won't testify? Is he not alive anymore? What happened?
No, just the opposite, actually.
He recanted those things? Or
no, he told about the time that his dad sat him down and said, there's a Hobb family secret.
Right.
Yeah, which was...
But he wasn't interviewed in the doc. It was just the friends of his.
So it's Terry Hobbs' brother's
son.
But the brother has never spoken, and there's no way to like
ask him to.
Yeah, there's no.
The prosecutor would have to do it. Yes, if they're not going to do.
Well, that's what one of the defense attorneys is saying. It's like he'd have to have
a grand jury,
and then and ask, you know, basically say you have to tell us what you said.
Yeah, and Michael Hubbs Jr.'s two friends, they all passed a lie detector test with flying colors that what they heard is true.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hobbs family secret, and then there's a few other. They said that his mom would know, and there was about seven or eight people that he knew that knew the secret.
Right. And that all just came out because the private investigator they hired talked to that part of the family. But I just didn't see any interview with Hobbs Jr. And then like his face is sort of blurred out.
Yeah,
so I'm just wondering what happened there with that interview process.
They're interviewed in the dock, but. And then, you know, the couple and the friends, especially, they say right on camera, they have them saying, you can use this for whatever you want to use it for. But they never have an interview with his brother.
Well, and they're dropping little breadcrumbs throughout the doc, too, because it shows those informational billboards. If you have information, call.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
And
yeah.
then one of the guys sees
free billboards outside of
that might be where the money, the fundraising was going. I mean, they raised a lot of money. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the friends saw that and then called the hotline and said, I have some information.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So they didn't have to go.
Yeah. Cause they have the voice recording saying, hi, I need to speak to someone.
Yeah.
So it had to be a hotline or something. Yeah. So
but because they blurred out the junior's face, I'm wondering if it was just like this thing of like, I know I said all this stuff, but I just can't. Be even though I don't know why
I still
dad's
gotta go to family,
face
I gotta go to
out.
Family Christmas and stuff.
Well,
you know?
The dad's face isn't blurred out, so that's interesting. And maybe he was a minor in the photo. That's the only thing I can think of.
That's very true.
That might be the only reason.
And you could also
have
asked them, you know, blur my face.
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. Like he just,
I have a pathological hatred of bullying and people in power crapping on people who have no ability to defend themselves. I believe in justice. I mean, I think, you know, there are good people and bad people. There's people that do horrible things and they should be punished. Justice should be fair. It should be honorable. It should be decent. It should speak to our values as human beings, that right must prevail. And all that I could see in the case of the West Memphis Three is wrong was prevailing, and that wrong was being perpetrated by people who, I believe, knew they were doing wrong.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So let's get back to the beginning of this, which is for those people who don't know anything about this case, I guess. You have Jesse, Miss Kelly, Jason Baldwin, and Damien Eccles are accused of killing three kids, Stevie Branch, Michael Moore, and Christopher Byers. And basically, there is no physical evidence at all.
None.
Tying these kids to these murders, these teenagers to these 8-year-olds' murders. And it's like a nasty bit of business here.
And also keeping in mind, no DNA, proper DNA testing
in 93.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go after them basically on appearance. I mean, they all think because Damien Eccles has like long, maybe dyed black hair and wears maybe a like
trench coat,
or
has a staff that he walks around with.
Right. Yeah. Like the classic nerdy gothy,
the goth kid
teenage
from school.
Kid.
Yeah.
But in Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Which is really going to stand out. Maybe he had black like fingernail polish or something. And so like they're like, okay, we're going to go after these three guys and then put them on trial. And then they just, the prosecuting team and the cops and then their expertise people just basically just bumble their way through this.
But also what worked against, you know, Damien in particular is being so cocky and so young, because you see the clips of him like giving, flipping off,
right,
the, you know, flipping off one of the cameras in the courtroom. And that there's that super creepy shot they always use in the trailer of him being convicted and taking out of the prison and like sitting in the cop car and turning around and just this huge wide smile, and they always freeze frame on it. And
yeah.
Like, I mean, if you're just watching that on the news, you'd be like, that's a sick, twisted human being.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously he's thinking this is all a joke and this is all going to get resolved. I didn't do anything.
Right.
It's going to get resolved.
What the fuck would you do? Yeah. What would you do, Gavin? Like personally, like
I well, see this documentary I think is my favorite because I'm also like The Shawshank Redemption is my favorite movie. Like every other white male at 40.
Yeah.
But it's I do have a dreaded fear of going to prison for something I did not commit.
Yeah.
You know, for crime I didn't commit. And I just think I would hope that I would just sit in complete silence and understand everything I learned from watching Law and Order of like,
right,
do not talk to them.
Wait till
a lawyer is here.
Yeah.
Do not open your mouth. But then, you know, that's the confession tactic. They just keep you there and they just wear you down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do not talk to the police ever
without a lawyer.
Do not talk to the police. Even if you're innocent, if you take anything away from this episode of this podcast, do not talk to the police.
Did you watch The Night Of?
I have not watched The Night Of yet.
So
I
good.
Really want
it's
to.
It's good.
I just, you know, the joke is like, it's on my list because you know, we live in a great time of so much content.
My list.
You know?
My list.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good series. Is a season two out?
Oh, are they doing another season?
I think so.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah. It's a remake of a British show.
Oh.
And
John Turturro and the feet thing. Jesus.
Oh, John Turturro's in it. And Rhys Ahmaad's in that as well.
Yeah.
One of the breakout stars.
He's
been
guy.
In everything in
he's
the last
the guy,
couple
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a rapper too. I just
of course he is.
His rap project.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, I saw him rap on an episode of Girls.
Yeah.
So that all makes sense. Yeah.
Multi-hyphenate. That's what you have to be these days.
Donald Glover can do it, I'm doing it.
But it's like getting back to the doc, it's like, well, okay. Hey, George, what would you do if you're in that situation?
If I was accused of a murder of a child.
Or anything, like accused of anything that you didn't do.
Let's see. What would I do? I mean, I probably would
panic.
Yeah, not talk to the cops, not talk to the press. Definitely, you know, try to buy a nice suit.
Yeah.
When you go in there. I don't know. I guess I just try to line up all my alibis and line up all
the
people.
That's the thing, too.
As quick as possible
alibis.
And get it all written.
And they fucking had alibis. And the defense attorneys, like, the jury didn't... They were, like, snoozing.
Jesse was, like, in a different county?
He was at a wrestling event.
He was at a wrestling event where he got
name signed or something.
He got photos.
Yeah, they all had alibis.
And then what did the attorneys say? They said that the jury just wasn't paying attention during the alibi part.
Yeah. They just like they just kind of glossed over it. Well, it's interesting, you know, even the confession audio when you hear it's like, so what time was it? Probably noon.
Dude.
Well, it couldn't have been noon.
Right.
Well, it was like 4 or 5. Don't you mean like 6 or 7?
Right.
Yeah.
This was very Making a Murderer too. This made me think about poor Brendan.
It's the same. It's very much the same thing. Take the weaker minded individual.
Yeah.
Crack them. And then, you know,
right. Were they all over 18? I know Damien was 18. Cause that's the other thing. They could try them as a, try him as an adult.
16 and 17. Uh-huh. Jesse was 17. Jason was 16.
So he was the only one that was 18 that they could really like nail as a ringleader because they could try him as an adult.
And that's why they made him the figure. You know, it was him pressuring everybody else to do so. But even when they brought in those, you know, the people that have all recanted their testimony now, that's scary.
Yeah.
You know?
Could that you forgive shit. People? Could you forgive someone?
No.
Do you have it in your heart?
There would be a documentary about me murdering them when I was free from jail because like,
Well, the one guy was on
I'm
drugs.
A lesser man, I guess. I can't imagine finding it in me to forgive somebody that like sealed my doom.
Yeah. How many were there recant? How many recants were there?
Three?
There was the woman who claimed that Damien had told her all about his like cult plans and went to a cult meeting with him.
Right. Oh, right. That was when the cops had her kind of try to entrap him.
That's a different girl.
That's a different girl.
There's two different
women. Yeah, that girl you're going to lay out all these satanic books on your table. And
the only thing we said was don't get caught. That's the only thing we told her. It's like, don't get oh, you piece of shit.
And then
that guy, I hated that guy.
Yeah, and then the guy that talks about, you know, Jason, like, sucking the blood off the penis of the one dead kid.
Putting the balls in his mouth.
Yeah, and you're like,
on the stand, right?
On the stand, you know. And he was like, he had like a couple breaking and entering charges they were going to waive for him. So he did that all to get out of a couple breaking and entering charges.
That guy, right? Yeah. And he said he was on drugs and stuff, right? Yeah.
Been huffing gas, taking LSD. And
It's interesting that like people outside of it would flip on them no problem and lie. But then they do talk in this doc, especially about Jason not. You know, they offered him a deal to get out of jail earlier if he'd flip on Damien, and he refused to do it.
Yeah.
And he was the one who didn't want to take the Alford plea.
Yeah.
And that Eddie Vedder says it best. He says, you know, a man is innocent when he's willing to stay in jail to prove his innocence and fight to the end than get out.
Because I've only ever heard really anything about Damien and not really heard about the other two very much.
He became like the figurehead, and he wrote a couple books for me. I haven't read them, but he was the most... I guess he was sort of the leader of their freedom project, you know, the one that people interacted with the most, and especially once he met Lori and married her, which there should be a whole documentary.
They just kind of drop that in there. I'm just like, wait, so, huh? What?
Okay. And then she quits her job and becomes the full-time like leader of the resistance.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, from someone who can't even find somebody on Tinder, like, that's pretty awesome that he's
You gotta put that in your Tinder profile. You gotta go like, are you willing to?
You're not on Jinder? jail Tinder?
Jailder? No.
Jailder?
You don't have to swipe very much. Selder?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like.
It's just a cell door that goes right or left.
With the bar sound every time. Yeah.
Close right or close left.
Yeah, it's that would be a whole fascinating documentary because there's tons of these, you know, the people that like would fall in love with
Manson.
Yeah. Tons of people. Well, there's all kinds of serial killers that get marriage proposals.
Well, you know they can commit. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. They have no problem committing. He's a man of conviction.
Yeah.
The Buddy Cianci slogan, he's a man of conviction, I think. The mayor of Providence who was arrested.
Oh, right. It's always whatever the whatever their slogan is or their catchphrase always comes back to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, that's the other thing I didn't realize about this doc is that Nick Cave did the music. I think that's
with Warren Ellis. Yeah, I didn't realize that till the end either.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
So you got Peter Jackson, you got the whole Antipodes, you get all your Australians and New Zealanders smashed together.
Yeah, he just says, I'll make you a hobbit in the next movie. Come play a song for
me.
He'd
be more of an elf, I think.
I think Nick Cave would definitely be an elf, but what would Warren Ellis be?
Oh,
jeez. Not quite a hobbit.
He's more of a troll.
A mage.
With that beard, I think he would...
Some
kind of mage.
I think he would be, but... and then one of my absolute favorite people of all time. Here's the thing is forensics pathology is I love. I actually tried to get into the FBI at one point because I was very interested in this stuff. Too old, basically, to do that. I think the oldest you can be is 35 to submit. Yeah, because I love forensics pathology. And John Douglas is one of my favorite people, and he features prominently.
Is he the Mindhunter guy?
Yes.
He is the guy that Mindhunter is based on.
When I rewatched the doc this morning, I wondered, is that the guy that series is based on?
Is.
Like that idea starting forensics, or the, what do they call it? Like building the psychological profile.
Yeah, he's a profile. He kind of started that thing. Yeah. And that's a great series on Netflix. Mindhunter. Yeah, that's fucking dumb. But this, I like what he was saying. He's just like, this is just a murder. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a satanic ritual. This is not some sort of cult
but
thing.
But when they start just spelling out Terry Hobbs having a history of violence and the neighbor having to call the police on him, and the fact that they present him and say, well, your DNA was found, you and your friend's DNA
was found
at the crime scene.
How is the friend's DNA? Is it Hobley? Is that the friend's name? No.
Jacoby.
Yeah. How did...
Jacoby. What is the same as Twin Peaks?
Yeah, Jacoby.
There's no really accounting for that, and then they just have him kind of like... you know, trying to entrap Terry, right?
On the phone.
Yeah,
him on the phone calls.
But, it doesn't account for his DNA being at the scene. What was his DNA at the scene?
I don't know. Nobody knows.
That's another confusing element
but
to it.
Terry does keep talking to him and saying, like, we didn't do anything. He's reinforcing it. It's like, is he saying, you and I know what we did, but just stick to the story? or is he just trying to self? Because he did go to his house a couple times. Is there some way that DNA could be transferred? Like,
right. Well, I think that's what the point they were making is that they're saying, like, you went to his house to play guitar for an hour. So if you're really concerned about your kid being missing, why would you go do that?
And because you got to know, play Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. You got to know how to play
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't know. It's like Captain Obvious is if he beats this kid on the regular, he went a little too far. He had a couple witnesses. And
was wearing a denim outfit on the way out there. Had to change into some purple tank top.
That he bleached clean the room, the aunt says. And, you know, what more do you need?
And then you hog time, so it's easier to carry, I'd imagine.
Oh.
You know, that's what I was thinking. It's like,
but then why? All three because they were witnesses. Right. That's what it was, right?
But they said that all three actually died by drowning. So they weren't dead.
Oh, it was the hog tying and the throwing in.
Yeah, okay. They were alive, but he threw them in the river.
So like maybe cracked one of their skulls or something and went,
uh-oh.
You know, that panic. And even the wife says it best. I forget her name. The main mom, Pam.
Oh, Pam, yeah.
That she is, you know, she says, you know, I can see him doing this, like, and not admitting what he did was wrong, or like going to the police and just, and, you know, following through to preserve himself.
When he's on Geraldo too, that's an interesting like little cutaway they
when
have.
When he's just sitting, not
you
saying
see him, like
much?
Swallow, just like little,
and the amount of times that Pam would say, he just kept telling me, I have to move past it. I have to move past
let it. Go.
You know, let it go. Yeah. Let it go. And that is interesting that, you know, all the families came around to truly believe that the three were innocent. That's right. When you know that, you know, there's enough evidence against someone else.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, I haven't seen anything publicly written by, like, the daughter or anything by Amanda. But, no. Like, that's the daughter with Terry and Pam.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or the, you know, Mark Byers outside the courtroom, like, there he is, the child killer. Yeah. And he's like, I can say whatever I want, free country, First Amendment.
Yeah.
I don't know if that actually, that's still maybe considered libel because we get into the Dixie Chicks libel suit.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's always these people, they just always have the ego that they think they're ahead of the law, that they can beat the law. And then he tries to sue the Dixie Chicks. And that's what brings out the majority of the information against him, where they had, they deposed him properly.
Right.
And, you know, and he just couldn't have expected, like, oh, they're going to hit me with all this new information.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to make some quick Dixie Chicks money. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Some of that good old fashioned Dixie Chicks money. Thank God for the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah. They did a few good things.
Yeah. They have.
Yeah. They protested.
I don't know their music at all.
Yeah.
Me neither. They did that awful Landslide cover.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know.
But if any, I mean, George Bush hated them.
Yep.
George Dubb, anyways, and now fucking Terry Hobbs. So.
Seems like their careers really did take a hit from taking those stands, so definitely.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those things where they popped up in the documentary and I went, oh, yeah, there was a band called the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
Are they still active and playing? Who knows?
I don't know.
That's the next documentary. What happened to the Dixie Chicks?
Yeah. But the deposition is like, you dumbass, you could have just disappeared. But he's like, I haven't been arrested. No one seems to fucking care. I can get some fucking money out of this thing. And then he's like, oh shit, I have to sit.
Or doing it his way, like, if I sue them, then I look even more innocent. It's all part of the plan of, like, why watch how innocent I can be. And then, you know, the
he
money.
He was
you know.
Not ready for those questions about, like, what? So you walked into her house, grabbed her boob, and then, like, ran away? Like, he's like,
I have no memory
what she
of that.
Says. Yeah.
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 Yeah, and you half laughing as he's answering things. You think that's funny? Yeah. Oof. You would too. I'm tired of answering the same questions or whatever. Yeah.
That's just nuts. I would hate to be under cross-examination.
When we're sort of off the air, as they say, I'll tell you a movie plot that I wrote down today. Watching this documentary inspired a movie plot for me.
This is off the record. This is Patreon bonus material.
Anything said on this podcast will be the ownership of Sup Doc Podcast.
LLC.
Where now you produce this. Where you produce this now.
Then I murder the people who make the podcast and they got to make a documentary. It's never going to end.
Will's the only one with the audio files. Will, you got to go kill Will now.
We're all just feeding Netflix.
Yes.
We need more content. We need more murder. Go inspire more murderers.
Is Netflix the dirty prosecutor in this? I'm having trouble keeping up.
I don't know.
Where does Netflix fall in? It's
definitely
this
satire. That's a whole other movie we can make.
The Eddie Vedder's.
The Eddie Vedder's.
All soundtracks by Netflix documentaries are Eddie Vedder.
Where they killed a boy and threw me in the ditch. That's my Eddie.
Oh, that is Eddie. Perfect. Yeah. That was perfect.
Yeah, they do sneak a few of his songs in that documentary.
Covering Dylan, that's in there.
Did he write a song for the West Memphis Three?
Probably.
I'm sure it's out there.
It's probably one that I know and just didn't realize that's what it was.
Oh, yeah, there was the one that was like, oh, they were accused of something they didn't do, you know. Like, it's really spelling it out there.
I mean, there is definitely, it's, okay, so let's talk about this for a second, about documentaries that have a bit of a bias and a bit of a slant to it. I mean, obviously, Peter Jackson was a defender of the West Memphis Three.
Yes.
Then he makes this documentary. So, like, there are moments when, like, you know, the prosecuting attorneys and the cops look real dumb because of what they edit and how they edit.
Well,
also,
the one that they use is the, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about that or not.
Yeah.
You know, like they use that moment.
Yeah. Let me think if I'm actually supposed to talk about exactly. And then like some of the Terry, once they get into the Terry Hobbs stuff, like some of their like freeze frames on him is like, or like the side glances.
It's always the most evil, sinister. Yeah. It always reminds me of that Arrested Development episode where Job is saying, so I don't want to talk to you because, you know, I say something like, yeah, I killed him. And then that's where, and then it cuts to the news, like right in the middle of his sentence. Yeah. And I'm just going like, yeah, I killed him.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the fact that there is a bias in here inherently, I mean, I think obviously there is one, but
coming after the Paradise Lost films, this is definitely a social justice. We're on a war path to make change and make this happen.
Do you think the upper echelon of the prosecuting attorneys, and I'm specifically thinking about the Supreme Court moment where they're basically like, we don't really have a vested interest in this other than we don't want the state to get sued for millions of dollars.
I think that's the only that concern. And then the political fallout that would possibly affect their careers, the few people involved.
It seemed that way because I didn't realize Dennis Riordan was part of this whole thing. Because I remember in San Francisco, I think he ran for mayor or something once. Because I feel like I saw signs for him. I can't remember what he ran for. He ran for something. Or maybe like city attorney or something. Mm-hmm. But like when he's talking in front of the Supreme Court and he's like, yeah, there's new DNA evidence. There's going to be new evidence that's coming out of this. And then the attorney general dude, he's like,
so it's not new evidence. It's the same old evidence, just rediscovered.
And then one of the Supreme Court judges is like, well, don't you think it would be helpful if there was new evidence? And he's like, I'm sorry. What? Can you?
Why can't? What would be the disadvantage of presenting all evidence?
Yeah.
What? Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
It's like when my dad would be like, so why are you coming home after 6? I told you to be home at 6. Like, I'm sorry. What? Yeah. Can you repeat that? Why I think of my answer? The old what, like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's just, and I wanted to wait till after we do the podcast because now I'm like, okay, now I got some reading to do. What have the three been up to since their release? Have any of them been arrested? Like, what's been happening? You know?
Oh yeah. I really worry about Jesse. Like, his mental state to start with seemed rough. And then he's like, I just got to keep out of trouble. I'm like, I didn't see all your tattoos. I'm a little bit worried about in Arkansas what prison tattoos you might have ended up with.
Yeah, definitely. When he says, I just got to stay out of trouble. It's like, you have to convince yourself that hard after spending 18 years in jail.
Might
have some problems.
But you got to when you're inside, you have to do as when in Rome, as they say. You know?
And also, if he's seen making a murderer, he knows he should stay as far away from any criminal thing. You don't want to go back to jail for something worse than you were there for the first time.
Oh, my God, I know. That whole thing. You're like, Stephen Avery, come on. What are you doing?
Yep.
So there's supposed to be a new Making a Murder, or not a new, but a
follow-up.
Coming out.
I'm sure they're working. I mean, that was arguably Netflix's biggest hit ever. Of course, they're going to follow it up.
There's also a documentary presented by the prosecuting attorney guy who ended up being disbarred or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The prosecutor, huh?
Yeah.
In that case.
Oh.
There's a documentary on from their point of view, like the stuff you didn't get to see from the making, which I think is...
That's always... Yeah, it's anytime I watch like a 9/11 conspiracy video, I like to then go watch the anti-conspiracy video.
Made by the terrorists?
Yeah.
We didn't do it.
We didn't do it.
What are you talking about?
No, we did it. We did it. That's what they would say.
We did it.
Call this number for free shipping of lemonade. We didn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think, did you watch the Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix?
I really liked that.
You know, I like that one that they don't, because you're like, you watch the whole time, you're like, oh, there's going to be some huge reveal. No, it's just presenting it as happened, and then you decide. Even the trailers for that franchise, they had kind of like a "if I did it" and "I didn't do it" version.
Right?
Of the trailer.
Yeah, I kind of like. I've been calling those in my head. I have never said this out loud, but what happens next, docs? It's that whole series thing, which I really like. I think most. This is crazy generalization, but I think Americans love What Happens Next. Docs. Yep. That seems to be, what people are really into.
You mean like a BuzzFeed quiz? Or never believe. You must be an 80s kid if you remember what happened in this murder.
A Long Shot, is that what it was called on Netflix? About the ball game?
Yes. Yeah.
That same. The people do love, like, especially if it's like a kind of underdog. Because that's what we all tap into. That's what we all want in our own lives. So one day be vindicated for something.
Amen.
Or get that step up we weren't given the first time around.
Yeah, that's a spooky one too. But even Wild Wild Country
which I just finished last week.
It's insane. It's amazing.
What shocked me with that is I the first thing I just called my parents. I said, do you guys remember that? And they're like, nope. No, I'm like, it was in the national news for years. Like, never heard of it. I'm like, because there wasn't, spoiler alert, a mass suicide at the end, that it doesn't it doesn't have the reverence of Waco and the Branch Davidian or Jonestown or anything else.
Right, right. Yeah, there wasn't mass
killing.
They
sort of quietly dispersed at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, true. I remember when I was a kid hearing about the Rolls Royces thing. That's what I remember.
Yeah. A few friends that grew up in Portland, they're like, oh, yeah, I remember. They had songs, like the morning DJs would have songs about Sheila and stuff on the radio that they remember. But yeah, they don't remember most of the details from, and then you watch, because that doc is like, it's pretty insane that's not a bigger part of like common knowledge and history.
Yeah.
But again, a great documentary opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at first when I started watching, I'm like, this has to be fake because there's no way they have all this footage.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, they had their own like TV studio in there and they were filming everything that they ever did.
Yeah. Well, there's also the Portland Sentinel, whatever the newspaper and the TV station kept footage because someone in the archives said this is going to be important someday. And so they kept all that stuff instead of getting rid of it or re-recording over the tapes.
Well, yeah, because the one you can tell that they must have made one master copy of most of the footage because it all has the same distortion at the top. So that one tape is affected.
Right.
Yeah, because that's where my one friend was like, that's a filter. It's all fake. They just use the same stupid thing on it. And I was like, my guess is that there were like piles of tapes and they put them all into one like 6-hour master like beta SP tape. And that's what they're pulling everything from.
Interesting.
I was thinking when I watched West of Memphis, I thought, how crazy. There will probably be a time where, they make a big documentary about somebody gets free from jail, and then a few years later they find out they actually committed the crime.
Yeah.
I was just theorizing in my head, like, imagine, this case or Making a Murder or whatever, when it turns around, they go, nope, here's the definitive proof they did it. After everybody thinking for
out.
Years
yeah.
that they were, yeah.
But you can't be tried for that, right? Double Jeopardy, is that?
Can't be tried, as Ashley Judd taught us in Double Jeopardy or whatever that movie was.
And from Alex Trebek.
Yes, yes. Double Jeopardy.
Double, yeah.
That's what that's based on.
I think it's like, I don't know, just going back, like spending 18 years in prison at some point, I would have just given up fucking hope. I probably would have started my own gang. Weird shit in prison that I would make me stay there.
I would never want to hear. Yeah, I'd just be like, stop sending me support letter. Like all you're doing, like all the false hope, like to have that much like. But I guess if you have nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you have no.
Except a weird wife.
Seems like. Yeah, right. Seems like Damien kept up with reading and kind of had his own kind of mental escape, at least that way. And also was like in constant communication with the outside world.
Yeah.
Too.
And yeah, because Jason and Jesse, they rarely speak of their experiences in jail or kind of how much they lent to the fight in the legal case. I mean, there's a whole another chapter that can be told that tells different angles of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, too, even having basically 6 hours of documentaries already made. and then having another, I think this was 2 hours.
Yeah, it's just over 2 hours.
Just over 2 hours, a whole nother documentary with more information.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't spend a lot of time recapping either. The first 15 minutes or so brings you up to speed.
Yeah.
And then it's mostly new stuff.
Right. And they use some of the footage from those documentaries. Mm-hmm. In this,
yeah,
which is interesting because...
Well, they reference it. Just even the fact that, like, just the meta factor that, you know, his wife saw Paradise Lost, and that's what made her seek out writing him, and then they get married, and then she becomes the head of his, like, legal defense, and she's a huge part of what ended up getting him out of prison. Like, that's a crazy story.
That is a crazy story.
If HBO and Bruce Sinofsky had never made this documentary,
right,
they wouldn't be free.
Sometimes it appears to me that the attitude of the players involved in this case are, let's sweep this under the rug, let's hope it goes away. No one wants to admit they made a mistake. What about the lawsuits that are going to follow? And who cares about that issue? Let's just do the right thing. It's simple to do the right thing.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS or play online via Facebook games.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's play Cast This Doc.
We gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
It's hard for me because there was the movie made, The Devil's Knot, that had Reese Witherspoon and some people in it. But the one I think of is, I think her name's Ann Dowd. She's great. She's on The Leftovers.
Okay,
she played
sort
of the leader of the smoking
who's
gang.
Who's easily confused with Margot Martindale, right? They kind of have a similar look.
I don't know who Margot Martindale
but they're
is.
Like, so. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
Ann Dowd,
little heavy set, mm-hmm. like probably 50-ish.
Yeah.
Which is great character actor. She shows up in... She's on Handmaid's Tale. She shows up in everything.
Is she in Justified or is that Margot Martindale is in Justified? That's the one. Okay.
And again, I don't know what character she would play. She just feels like she could easily play one of the town folks, one of the mothers
or aunts. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
She definitely fits into that realm.
I wonder who would play the prosecutors.
Ooh. Hmm. Oh, one of my favorite names ever, Gary Gitchell.
Gary Gitchell.
That's such a great asshole.
With his little mustache.
Oh, that
and
little
too,
fucking
yeah.
mustache. Ugh, I hate that guy.
Yeah, like who
guy.
Would you get to play? There was like a more comedic actor that kind of had the big eyes that looked a little bit like him back if you were casting this in the 80s.
And it doesn't matter what era.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Ron Howard's brother.
Oh, Clint Howard.
Clint Howard. Maybe he could pull it off.
So who would play Damien? Like especially as a teenager.
Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
It just is him in real life.
I thought maybe like weirdly a name that's coming to my mind now is Jack White, but that's not exactly right. Oh, but you can kind of see like in the face a little bit.
Or there's that kid on Fear the Walking Dead who's kind of like the second coming of Johnny Depp.
Okay.
You know, like he'd be really good.
Yeah.
The Pam Hobbs character is such good. That was Reese Witherspoon in the movie.
Oh, really? Okay. That doesn't seem accurate.
Well, let's just have her do it then. We'll just call Reese back in. What about, though, Mark Byers?
I had one for that.
Oh.
Now, maybe this is going to be obscure.
Kechner.
Oh.
No,
yeah, David Kechner is in every documentary that we make.
Yeah, everything we cast.
But Vincent Schiavelli.
Oh.
Who is that? Do you remember the movie Ghost?
Yep.
The ghost, the angry ghost who tries to teach Patrick Swayze.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys that from, nailed that? From Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. I nailed that.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I've nailed that.
Yes.
Yeah. We can all agree that I've
there,
won the
there
game.
There is no
I
better actor game. Than him to play. Yeah.
George won the game. You get $5.
You think
George.
I jumped? You think I fell? Yeah. Oh, fuck you.
The more like just seeing him on camera, I'm like, that's the first person who comes to mind for me.
Oh yeah. He's great. He's got the stature.
No longer with
he's got the oddness. Yeah.
Terry Hobbs. And I'm not saying they look alike, but I would like to see this Sam Rockwell.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Especially when he was younger. You put the mustache and that perm he had in the 80s or the 90s. Yeah.
I love Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell's easily my favorite.
Yeah, there's a movie called Diary of a Teenage Girl, and I'm thinking of the male lead in that who kind of like, I want to say it's like Billy Crudup, but it's not. It's kind of like a similar vibe person. Billy Crudup in the last thing I saw him in. Damn, I'm trying to remember what it is, but yeah, he would kind of maybe be a good young Terry.
Right. Yeah. Or no, the current one could be Matthew McConaughey.
I was thinking that too.
Like as an older Terry Hobbs.
That's really good casting.
I don't know what you're talking about. No.
Yeah, someone a little more haggard, a little more Jeff Bridges type of a dude is what I'm thinking, but yeah.
And the judge is a bit. It's funny because the judge seems so nice and reasonable, but obviously he's
that guy's a piece of shit. I don't know
who would you get to play Jesse Miss Kelly.
Whew. Oh man,
maybe an unknown. Maybe we'll get an unknown for that.
Or I feel like one of like Eminem's friends from 8 Mile would probably fit right in there.
Here's a weird one for him. Like now, Corey Feldman.
Oh, like grown up, his head.
Yeah. I think he could nail that kind of confused woundedness.
Will this version of Jesse have some dance moves? Because
then
he's perfectly cast.
Of course. At the end, we're going to have...
And he spends all his money on his angels and his rap album or whatever, his pop album.
Well, we'll have MC Hammer do the music at the end and see if he can dance. It'll just be slammer time.
I guess it was 1993 when all this stuff happened. That would be their taste in music. It stayed at that level.
Too legit to quit.
Now, do you think the satanic stuff is just like... Do you think like that flies everywhere, or particularly in Arkansas? Like the satanic stuff seemed to be
on
the rise.
It's
got to
hit harder, like Bible belts and backwater areas for sure, where religion is so ingrained. I don't think if it was tried in L.A. or anything, but no. Then again, with Manson and everything, it might be easy to convince people that
I think Americans have religious DNA in all of us because of just how the puritanical settling of this country. Mm-hmm. I think we all have some religious DNA in us, but you mentioned a phrase yesterday, George, one of our interviews that I love, which was, and Will, if you could put some reverb on my voice on this, satanic panic, which I love.
It was going around definitely throughout the 80s and these videos, these tutorials, it's just like a woman with a pentagram on her stomach and they're just like, this is what we showed people, this is what we showed cops about
like you might see incisions in this shape on the stomach.
I feel like you go from like that to like easily it just jumps to like Pizzagate. I feel like the kind of like gullibility of like hey, it's a child pedophile
child
ring,
sex ring out of a pizza
they're
parlor.
Satanic, and then there's like spirit cooking, and you can go easily from like there's this kid, he likes weird music, he has a weird haircut, he has a staff, maybe he's read Aleister Crowley, and then it just jumps to obviously it's Illuminati, and obviously it's all
I mean, thank God for the internet. All the conspiracy theories are alive and well, because everybody who thinks anything can now properly prosed little website together. Mm-hmm. And then anyone else that thinks anything like that,
the red string keeps the internet together. You guys, red string keeps it together.
Yeah, it is nuts. You can, cause I also now need to go look up on the internet if there are like, The West Memphis 3 definitely did it, and here's the reasons why. There have to be anti-West Memphis 3 sites.
On my way over here, I just thought I would just try to find a podcast about this case. Yeah. And I ended up on a pretty nutty one. I can put a show link in there, but it was basically a guy who was an expert on the occult and 9/11 and also how it ties into the West Memphis 3 case and it all ties to Aleister Crowley. And then, but then I'm
wait,
like,
the West Memphis 3 are responsible for 9/11?
No, that would be, yeah. That was truly an inside job from the inside of jail. But if you just take all of that logic, I mean, you can just tie anything to anything.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I remember like liking some conspiracy theories because it's like, then he would say all this shit I think is bonkers. And then he'd be like, and then that's how it ties to the 99% and like how we the bankers didn't get off and George W. Bush and Barbara Bush might be the daughter of Aleister Crowley. I'm like, okay, I like 5% of what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, just stop. There's a point where you should stop.
I just want a smear of your beer.
If only could have a little bit of your paranoia
You had me at hello. I don't need the rest yet.
But yeah, if like you have that kind of thinking that you can, anything can be linked to anything, really. Yeah.
Wasn't President Obama supposed to release information about aliens? And then didn't Trump, when he first got in, he was like, I'm going to release all the alien stuff.
I feel like he's not interested. He hasn't figured out how to monetize the alien stuff. Oh, otherwise, he would have done it.
I'm a big Kennedy conspiracy person. I love the Kennedy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one's just so there's no clear. And it's all like because, you know, he was shot leaving the courtroom, you know, or the jail day. That just puts a maddening angle on it.
I know. He never had a chance other than saying I'm a patsy.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm not guilty. I'm a fucking patsy. And then a well-known mob connected strip joint owner who is like friends with
Jack
cops.
Ruby and Oswald.
Yeah. Jack Ruby was friends with all the cops because they would fucking go to a strip joint all the time. Let him kind of slide in, you know, and it's like, but I also heard that like, you know, Bush was part of it. And Ted Cruz was famously
his
father.
Trump said his father was part of it because he was a Texas businessman.
You know, not being an American and not being able to vote in your country yet and
fucking
what,
foreigner.
What I can say, what I've surmised about Donald Trump is whatever he says, flip it 180 and that's the truth.
Yeah. That's a good point.
He'll keep flipping it and it just keeps flipping.
I don't know what weighs up or, you know, yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
I have a weird connection to Pizzagate.
Oh, you do?
Well, I have a friend who...
Were you one of the kids?
No, I have a friend who has a painting at the restaurant.
Okay.
Because it was like a place that touring bands would go. And so he has a mural up at the restaurant. So he's been getting trolled by all these people online that think he's part of the cult.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah. Dude, I would just say yes.
Yeah.
By my
t-shirt.
He's
getting like doxxed and stuff. So I don't think he wants to encourage it.
I don't know if even it's like bad publicity is still good publicity if the, you know, if they spell your name right, but it's like I don't know anymore if that's true.
I don't know. Not in the era of doxing people. Yeah, I'd say no.
And just people are fucking nuts, man. I mean, they can find out where you live pretty easily,
dude. That's why I don't like even posting on Reddit or reading anything on Reddit.
I took on a Russian troll on Twitter.
Oh no!
With 5 followers, he has 5 followers. I said something like a joke about Trump. He was like, "What's up?" Like,
yeah, but he's backed by 1.6 million in bots.
Exactly.
So.
And he was like, "What's up, unfunny man?" He's like, "Why don't you just go eat some more, fat ass?" And so I went to his Twitter thing and I was scrolling through, and he apparently just graduated from the University of Oregon. But he put a picture where he said, "This is me and my best bud. See you next year's Ducks. It was great to graduate or whatever." And it was a picture of Joey Harrington, who's a quarterback for the Detroit Lions in 2001. And I just, I'm a, you know, Lions fan. So I knew that. And I found the original picture and I tweeted back at him. I was like, "Oh, is this you?" And he was like, "Yeah, man, that's me and my best friend." I'm like, "No, that's Joey Harrington from the Detroit Lions because he went to University of Oregon." Oh. And the guy, like 30 seconds or less later, tweeted at me a picture of me where I don't know where he got it.
Oh, Jesus.
Super close up, though, so that I look horrible because you can see every imperfection. And he just started like tweeting like pictures of me. And I was like, oh, like,
he only had 5 followers.
5 followers.
Well, at least nobody saw it.
But it was all, it was like all retweets that he was doing. It was all pro Trump stuff.
Oh, Jesus.
With just 5 followers. But I was like, oh, man, that was spooky. It was pretty spooky.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
It was a photo that you don't think is online. Like,
I don't know
what
the
photo
is. It was such a close up of my face. I don't know what. But he was like, "Hey, listen, 60-year-old fat guy, like, shut up or whatever." And I'm like, "I'm not 60. So, anyways.
Yeah, that's scary shit. And we also had a little run-in with Anonymous. Did you hear about that?
Oh, no. Yeah. No, we didn't have a run-in. They helped us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd still call it an interaction.
With the podcast?
We had an interaction with
Anonymous. Yeah, they transcribed a whole episode of our podcast for us.
As no a thank kidding. You for, because we did the Going Clear, the Scientology one with L. Ron Hubbard's great grandson was our guest.
I shot a music video at the Celebrity Center.
Oh, ooh. No. Tell us about
that. Did you get permission?
So I had just seen Going Clear like days before this happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I joked. I'm like, I got to wear a tinfoil helmet in there. I don't want to go in. And it was for an artist who will remain nameless, but whose family is super tight and
Beck.
And,
it was, yeah. Beck.
It was. Does his name rhyme with Marg Belly? No, sorry.
But they went. Anyways,
that's an R. Kelly joke.
They have like a, you know, a, I guess it's like a an event space in there that they can put blackout. And we just kind of needed like a blackout room for this. And they're like, oh, we go shoot it there. And I was highly against it, but they're like, let's go in. We go in like, what kind of camera do you want to shoot on? No, I think we'll get like this red camera. Great. We'll have it here for you. What kind of lenses do you want? Well, we're thinking about this. Great. We'll have them here.
They just have reds just like, to lend out.
Whatever we asked for, they said yes. I'm like, this is how it works. Because I was like,
they want you
this
in.
This is pretty cool. Yeah. You know? Like, and so we went and we shot that day. But while we were there, about 8 or 9 hours into the shoot day, they put us on lockdown because somebody was running around the campus with a gun. And all we heard was,
on the Celebrity Center?
He's got a gun. Yeah. Whoa. So like we all had to like hide. It was like 10 minutes of hiding. And then like, okay, let's just, everything's good. Let's go back to work. And I was like, I think we need to wrap this last shot up and get the hell out of here. And from what I could gather, it was somebody who was not happy that a family member had like joined and had come onto the, but there's like, it's resolved. And it's like, that person's dead and buried in here now. We got to get out of here. But we finished up, and then when we were leaving, my cinematographer was like, man, like I just got his email, and like the main coordinator there, I got his email, like they said they need a DP here like all the time. They have all this thing. I'm gonna get so much work out of these guys. I was like, it's good knowing you.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah. It's good knowing
Peace
you.
Out.
He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, come on.
What level of thetan? What are the thetans?
Yeah. He's shooting. I think he DP'd Mission Impossible 6. Yeah, no.
Speaking of like paranoia, like this was a thing that I remember now, like from watching this. It's like, if you're ever in any kind of interrogation situation, they offer you a water. Mm-hmm. They offer you like
a cigarette.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you like hungry? You want McDonald's? Whatever you get for you.
Zip, going in the Ziploc bag.
Get your DNA and then go. Yeah.
Which was interesting. So it seems like the cigarette butts they got from
Terry Hobbs
are inadmissible because
the way
they were not, it was not a clean get. They couldn't get video of him like leaving a handprint on something or like having a saliva on a thing. But that was pretty much like a smoking gun, right? We had all assume that is like the crux of this movie's argument.
The only DNA that matches anybody in the town, you know?
Right. Yeah. Found in the ligature of one of the fucking...
It was a hair, right? They found a hair in the ligature,
Yeah. Boy, well, I'm glad you guys aren't in jail so that we could do this podcast.
It'd be a lot cooler if I was.
It would be a lot.
For you guys. Yeah. Not for
me. It'd be like, we'll just add some sound effects of like clanking doors.
Yeah.
So we're here with Hollywood's Gavin Booth.
Perfect, just a little bit of echo and some odd shouting in the
he
background.
He killed someone at the Scientology Center, and here we are.
Yeah. And here we are now. But Gavin, thank you for joining us, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
This was awesome.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scovel.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.